From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
This is the old-fashioned way of doing it. You're going to have services come to you, which is exactly what the commercial paradigm shift that we need for this whole space to kind of get into the next gear. And that's coming.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. What is up, everyone? I am your host, Charlie Schrem, and you're listening and watching another epic episode of The Charlie Schrem Show, where together, you and I, twice a week, we dive deep with some of Bitcoin and crypto's most influential leaders. We get to understand subjects, we get to see some really cool things happen, and we get to follow along these stories kind of as they're happening. And I'm really excited to have on our show, Humayun Sheikh. Thank you so much, H, for coming on the show today.
Charlie, pleasure.
Really appreciate it. You were saying how earlier you listened to this show. A lot of people who listen to the show become our guests on the show, and you're the co-founder and CEO of Fetch.ai, especially now with all the news going around, and we'll talk about that in a second with what you guys are doing. There's a crazy kind of narrative happening and a lot of stories and a lot of kind of intermingling things that are happening at the same time. You as a guest, we get to talk today about AI, about crypto, and about what it's like now merging with other crypto projects. Three different subjects that I'm actually eager to talk about, so many other things too. But before that, can you give a little bit of background about you? You guys are an OG company. You've been around through the bear markets. And that's, I know, and a lot of listeners know that's very important. How did you get into crypto? And how did you see the narrative of AI and crypto coming together all those years ago?
Yeah. So my beginning of the AI career is roughly 15, 16 years ago. I was part of DeepMind. Actually, it's earlier than that. It's probably 20 years. And I was always interested in it. And we started working with Demis Hassabis, who is a close friend of mine. We were kind of thinking and working together about artificial general intelligence. And he then started DeepMind. And I was the first investor in DeepMind. And we used to always have this discussion, whereas he was very focused on actually building the technology and bringing it, you know, to life. My objective really has been always to see how you can actually commercialize AI. And it was quite interesting times, because think about now, 18 years, 16 years ago, AI was in its winter, because it goes through cycles, right? So it was quite clear that when we exited DeepMind, the commercialization point was very difficult, because that was one of the reasons we exited DeepMind into Google, and for a very, you know, a lower value as well, perhaps. If you look at what DeepMind has achieved, what it was doing, it was quite clear the commercialization model didn't exist. And the only commercialization model was, you know, big company, which has a lot of data, which has a lot of customer base. They can use it to improve their returns. They can use it to provide better service to their customer. But there was no way of getting smaller businesses, individuals interacting with it, with AI itself, or a commercialization strategy which you could apply. So things have changed since then. And you saw how, you know, it all kind of kicked off with OpenAI. But before we get into that, so it was quite interesting when I came out of that, when we exited to DeepMind, what was top of my agenda was to really form a platform or some framework which enable smaller businesses, individuals to interact with this AI, which is coming, because we could see that was going to be coming in the next, you know, 10, 15 years. And it was very clear. It was, you know, clear as daylight. And we needed a way to commercialize it. We needed a way to make it usable. And I looked around. So the first thing we looked around was agent networks, so multi-agent systems. And the reason why that is quite important here is, and I'm sure your listeners and people who are interested in AI would be seeing this as we go through this phase, is that the agentic networks are going to become more and more important. And the reason is you've solved this kind of user interface problem a little bit because you have this OpenAI, you have ChatGPT, you have all the LLMs.
Chat. Yeah.
The chat. So your interface is now just your language, right? It doesn't matter if it's coding. It doesn't matter if you want to do something. It's an action. So that interface is now, in a way, kind of we know where we're going with it. It's going to get better. You can do voice. You can do multimodal. You can do all sorts of things. What is still missing is how do you take that objective, that task, that requirement, which comes using language, and how do you execute the components of that? And that's where the agents kind of fit in. Because if you try and build a monolithic system, which actually starts from point A and ends in point Z, and then your objective changes slightly, then it's very difficult to readjust. So that's kind of the way the paradigm shift is going to look like. You have the user interface, which is great. You have all the LLMs. You have all the generative models, which are going to do great things for a certain use case. But when you start bringing it to applications, the way we develop applications is going to completely change.
So right now, like we're all interfacing with AI is like we're the consumer directly. And it's like we're interfacing with these LLMs, which are like the ChatGPTs or the Gemini or Artemis or whatever they're named after. You think that in the future, that really big shift is all applications and software, even things that we're using now and just how we talk to life, you know, how we deal with like even the city government. You know, I always joke that like they use the oldest and slowest software. They're the last ones, you know, to update. So when that's all changing, like that's
And there's a reason why that's right. So they have to look after all the components in one go. And the paradigm shift is that you break it into smaller pieces. It gets updated quicker. Every small piece that has its own intelligence. Every small piece has its own ability to connect to other pieces. And so you can take one piece, you can update that piece, and you can put it back in, and then suddenly your service is not affected. So you can actually upgrade a lot quicker, and you can componentize it, and it's a lot more flexible. So at the moment, you have to go through menus, you have to go through this, that. I mean, yes, the old way would be, okay, let's use LLM, let's go to somebody's site, click, click, click. You know, the LLM is doing it for you. Automation is doing it for you, but it's very inefficient because you're kind of trying to bring, you know, the new AI application model to the old Web 2 e-commerce application model.
So when you hear people say, like, I'm moving subjects a little bit, but there's a lot of people, I hear this like catch line, like crypto is the currency of AI. How do you think about that?
So now we're kind of establishing that agents are the way to go if you're going to build applications. Now the agents, when you look at what the agents do, you take the understanding of your objective, you convert that into multiple tasks or subtasks. Every subtask is maybe carried out by one or many agents automatically, and they deliver the task. Now, let's assume one of these tasks is the economic value exchange, right? So how does the economic value exchange trickle through the whole system? Let's say you are sitting, wherever you're sitting, you have a hardware which monitors what the temperature outside is. And let's say I am building an application which needs that. So my agent will go to your agent and say, hey, I want that inference from your system. Could you give me the temperature? And I'm going to pay you for it. So if you try and do that with the old fashioned system, it doesn't work. So the AI in itself, the model training
requires. Yeah, I see what you mean. The AI truly requires,
So all these agents which are going to go around doing little things for each other, they're going to need value exchange somehow. So what's the method of value exchange? So that's a very interesting point. Digital currency is the value exchange. I'm not going to just call it crypto because I think it's unfair to call it just crypto. It's two prong. You know, you have a digital currency, you have a token or some form of value exchange, economic value exchange, but then you also have the distributed ledger technology itself, which we haven't talked yet. So if you look at all the agents and the orchestration of these agents and the auditability, because that's one of the biggest problems the regulators are going to have is,
good point.
We don't like this big box approach, right? How do we make it transparent? How do we make it clear? If my agent did something, who's going to tell them why the agent did it, how the decision was made, where is it all recorded? So you need the decentralized approach there. You need a distributed ledger technology there to keep a record, to make sure the auditability exists. But also with auditability comes privacy, you know, security, privacy. So that becomes quite interesting and important. But we're not at that phase where everybody's just using agents for all the purposes, but we are entering that stage. So we're going to see a lot of maturity in this space.
Yeah. What are some good agents that people can do? So there's a lot of, you know, I see like the writing prompts are one example that we talked about, but eventually it's not going to just be consumer level stuff. It'll be analyzing weather data, health data. There's so many sorts of applications that this can be applied to.
I think the shift in the model is also quite mental shift and economic. So when we say at the moment, what you do is somebody's health data is used by a company to build something, right? But now just flip it on its head. You have your health data. You use it for your own purpose.
Yeah.
So you can say, hey, here's my health data. It's now my agent is aware of it. Go find me some health insurance.
That's what we need. Like, I don't want my health data to be a part of some massive network. I'm fanatical about my health data. My wife and I get our blood drawn and analyzed every 3 months. I want my data. I want to know what's going on in my body, especially after some of the shit that I went through earlier in my life. But I have no way to use that data. Like, I just look at it and I call my doctor and he explains and we talk about things. And I'm very like scared of that data leaving my doctor's facilities because I know that if I had access to that, hackers will have access to that too, which they probably have already. But I'd love to be able to like understand the data better and then source health insurance. But potentially if I have hereditary stuff, like, I don't know, like I have a lot of interesting stuff going on that's not like bad per se, but it's like curious and I want to understand my health better. But there's so many applications. So why is no one doing that? Or why am I not hearing about it? Because I would think I would.
Well, you're not hearing about it because the paradigm shift hasn't kicked in yet. because the tools are missing, right? You're hearing it at least from me now. So you're going to see that in the market very soon because that's exactly what's coming. Because the whole point is that you have this information, which is yours, and the agent's going to be using it for your benefit. And actually, so you, like you said, health insurance. So
I'd
your
pay
agent
for that.
Will be fully aware, right?
Yeah.
You can actually ask your agent, hey, I need my best health insurance. You forget about it. You don't have to go on websites. You don't have to make the active effort. Your agent is doing it. And it's communicating with the health insurance companies, with their agent, and they're kind of coming up with the right deal. Speaking to, let's say, a new model for blood analysis comes along, the agent goes and finds the results and finds you what information is needed, it delivers it back to you. So this will become a lot more flexible. It's not like if I have to do something, I have to knock on somebody's door. This is the old-fashioned way of doing it. You're going to have services come to you, which is exactly what the commercial paradigm shift that we need for this whole space to kind of get into the next gear. And that's coming.
I'm like researching if my local hospital like does anything with data and AI, and they just don't even, it's like so archaic, like their articles and stuff like that. They don't even understand what's going on.
It's the access. It's missing. Access is very difficult. If you make the access easier, if you make the ability for them to use AI easier, then that will change. And that's exactly what's coming next.
Explain how you guys use encryption. How does encryption actually keep the data, but then you can use the data and know that the data is not being shared? Keep the data in a way that protects the user's data. It's the data too many times there.
We start from the basic principles, right? If the data is sitting with you and I don't take your data anyway, I don't share your data with anybody, well, then I don't have that problem of encryption, right? So I don't want to share data with you. What I want to share is that you share the insights from your data into the agent, and the agent shares those insights with other agents. So you don't actually anywhere reveal your data. And that's the principle we want to go. We want to touch with data as little as possible. So you maintain your data, you maintain your own model. I'm sure you've seen there's pretty decent models coming out, the large language models
yeah.
for your mobile devices. Now, you know, Apple, for example, you know, Android, they're good at their own privacy and security. We don't need to interfere with that. What we need to do is we need to take that, we need to convert that into insights rather than data, because data, just passing data around, is very inefficient. And actually, it's the old model. The new model is insights. So an agent comes from other side and says, I can offer you health insurance. You know, what do you need? You don't need to share the data to give them what they need. Till you agree, and then you share the data based on who you need to share it with, rather than your data becoming public to everybody and anybody. And that's the kind of mindset which needs to change in everybody, that that is possible. That's not some future thing. This is possible right now.
So there was some pretty big news recently. You guys launched the Artificial Superintelligence Alliance, which is basically an amalgamation of Fetch, the Singularity Network, and Ocean Protocol, and to kind of bring three of the very top projects in the space and kind of like come together. I have so many questions. Where did the idea come up? It's a great idea, and I think it's going to be very successful. And I'm very impressed. And it's the type of, these are the type of things that need to happen. If not, more projects should do this. And I'm surprised you guys are probably going to be the straw that break the camel's back. But I want to know where the idea came from and how excited you guys are and what you just see for the future.
So as I said, from history, I've realized that, you know, when we sold out to Google, to DeepMind,
from their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
It was quite clear that you need this whole technology stack if you want to use AI in any meaningful way, right? So that, what is the technology stack? The technology stack is you have the ability to interact with the consumer, which is their applications, Google, you know, calendar, email, all of those things. Then the next bit is the middle bit, which is where the technology sits. Like, what is the AI algorithms you're going to be using? What are you going to use them for? So that's the second layer. And the bottom layer is, okay, if I have all that marketplace and I have all the consumer, how am I taking their data? How am I using it? Where am I storing it? All my storage, my handling of the data, all of those things. So these are the three components, let's say, on a very superficial top layer. These are the components which sit within a big organization. Now, switch back to smaller organizations. Now you can see, well, here's the difficulty, right? Fetch works on agentic network. That's just something which it's like a user interface, but it's like the end bit of the user interface, which is, you know, that carries out the task that you need to carry out. So that's one layer. For us to go and do all of those things, which Google does, for example, is near enough impossible. But we have other projects, like if you look at Singularity, they are very good at doing research into AI and AGI. If I change Fetch's direction to doing just research, then we miss out on commercialization.
Oh, yeah.
And our focus is in commercialization. So how do you take that to the next level is you have this other layer of AI commercialization in terms of model building, providing the tools to build models, inferences. Singularity is strong on that. So that's the second component. But you mentioned, so how do you make sure the data stays encrypted? You know, what is the security level? So now you have to deal with data, right? So Ocean deals with data. If you kind of on a very...
Literally what it is, yeah.
Squint yourself, squint your eyes and look at it, it tells you that it's a big corporation structure now.
But it's decentralized projects and DAOs.
Yes. So now you're
building... Multiple communities, strong now.
Yes. So you bring three communities together, you bring three technologies together to build this technology stack. And you bring all the liquidity in from all the tokens into one. So yes, it has its complications. Now we have three strong teams with three strong founding members. They need to sit down together. They need to agree on things. But that was quite an interesting problem. For me, that was quite easy. But sometimes I think people try to overcomplicate issues.
Sure.
If you said, hey, this is our principle. We're going to make technology which flows through all the way. That's a very simple thing to think about because you want integrations between all three projects, tech integrations.
Yeah.
That we can do. We were already working on that with Ocean. We worked nearly 2 years in this German initiative. And so we could see what the tech stack looks like. They knew us, we knew them. Singularity, we've been working for a year and a half, which gave me quite good understanding on how these, you know, these technologies can be kind of put together. And when I sat down with both the teams and we discussed this, it was quite clear that the synergies and, you know, the complementary technologies were just ripe for bringing together. Because if you are going to give an alternative to big tech, then you have to somehow mirror the ease of use.
Yeah.
The reach to the 100%
and the user experience also.
So once we got on the journey, it was very clear that that's the thing to do, because if you're going to compete with, I mean, it doesn't even have to be compete. If you're just going to provide an alternative, a decentralized alternative, which doesn't exist at the moment for any users, any small businesses, we want to bring an alternative, which is a viable alternative. And you don't want to just say, ah, yeah, you can use this, the whole stack, but we don't have this, we don't have this, we don't have this. But go back again to all the other corporations and get those components. So we launched ASI Alliance with the vision that we want to build this whole stack, which starts from data, research, building models, tools to build models, tools to integrate and commercialize, all of that stack easily connectable, and not have this complication of there's 10 projects in this alliance and each has their own token with different types of liquidity.
Yeah.
And everybody has to convert and then lose some money in doing the conversion. You know, you switch from one token to the other, high liquidity to low liquidity. You're going to change the price. You're going to do all of those things. I mean, why does the user care? I mean, why does a business who's building a solution want to worry about that? Right. So that's the alternative approach. We're saying you don't need to worry about details. They're all taken care of. You can be comfortable that they're taken care of. You don't have to worry about token prices. It's one token through the whole tech stack. You know, it's the utility token which you need. You don't need anything else. So it makes you the kind of the place to go for AI solution. We're not targeting everything. We're talking about AI solutions.
Do you think there's any future in wearables like the Apple Vision Pro or anything like that?
Of course. I mean, I have no doubt they're going to get better and lighter and all of those things. And actually, it fits in with this model, the agent-based model, because you could just speak to your agent and the agent provides you the response either in writing or graphical format, and you can see it. I mean, these big Vision Pro type things are going to become small glasses like the one you're wearing, right?
Yeah.
So that's where we're going.
I mean, Google's
vision was right.
Well, listen, thank you so much for taking the time and coming on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure.
I'm really excited to what you guys are doing and to follow the story and to have you on again in the future.
Absolutely. I'm sure we'll speak again.
You can't vote, you said?
No. When you join this program, you are basically disavowing connections to the U.S. So you have to change your voter registration to Puerto Rico.
Wait, Puerto Rico? I forgot you can't.
President. Does not have the ability to vote for president. And there might be some other national elections that you can't vote for either. I don't even think there are any Puerto Rican senators or House.
You can vote for the federales.
Yeah, I can. I am, but I don't even know who's in the election. Anyway, whoever gets voted in Puerto Rico, you just want to make sure that they're not corrupt. If they're not corrupt, then okay, they're actually better than the previous head of state.
We're going to talk about Portal Bitcoin DeFi in just a moment and how you co-founded it a couple of years ago, Chandra Digarala and George Burke. Thank you guys for coming on the show. George, back to Puerto Rico for a second. 4 years or 5 years later now, or 6 years since like the migration started down to Puerto Rico, like how is it now? I talk to people all the time that are loving it, that are there, you know, because you have to commit, you know, and it's all these years later. What have you seen any differences?
I actually tried getting Chandra and his brother, also our co-founder, Manoj, to move as well. But Chandra really likes the good life, very fine things. And, Do you remember what you said about why you wouldn't want to move here?
Yeah, I can't deal with that infrastructure there.
I understand.
It was like if I wanted to move to a third world country, I'd have stayed in
India. I probably said that.
I was probably after a few drinks.
But it's true. Sometimes you see like mansions, but then like on streets that they're not manicured.
Yeah, that's right. There are cracks in the sidewalk. The roads haven't been paved in 40 years.
Electricity, Wi-Fi.
Yeah, the electricity goes out like once a week.
Also, when we had that conversation, George, I was living in Silicon Valley when it wasn't a total, you know, dumpster fire. It was the best place for a tech entrepreneur to be, the greatest collection of talent ever assembled in human history and all that stuff, greatest amount of wealth created. So why would you leave that, right? For taxes? No.
Charlie, to give you an illustration of what's going on with Puerto Rico here and the type of people here, our head of marketing, Dan Edelbeck, is on the call with us. Dan is also a new Puerto Rican.
Hey, Dan. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm new to Portal, but definitely not new to crypto. Been in Puerto Rico now 3 years. I actually planned on trying to get down to Puerto Rico in 2018. And unlike Chandra, I kind of enjoy things a little bit rough around the edges. Just got back from Dubai and Token 2049. It's a really great conference, and there's a ton happening in the space right now, but the whole Dubai scene is definitely not my scene.
Yeah.
It's too flashy and too fancy. I like when there's a couple potholes in the road and you have to navigate some systems, you know?
Oh, as my other guest just told us, Dubai had its issues with the flooding and everything. So, I mean, no infrastructure is perfect. You were just there at Token 2049.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah. I myself was there. I was there. And then also our head of business development, Robin, was there. It was a great week. But yeah, it was insane. There were times that it would take an hour and a half, 2 hours in an Uber to go like 5 miles down the road. Streets were completely congested, flooding everywhere. It was really chaos. They definitely built the city for the glitz and the glam, but didn't think about the basic infrastructure you need to be able to handle a little bit of rainwater.
In Token 2049 in Dubai this week, what were the hottest topics that you heard? Were there any like common denominator things that you kept hearing over and over again at different parties or events or meetings during the day or things that were even Uber rides or whatever?
Definitely. I mean, I think by far and away that the prevailing narrative and the excitement right now is around the emerging Bitcoin ecosystem. Obviously, when we were during Token 2049 was 420, which was the halving event. And there were a lot of celebrations around the halving and the excitement around that. But not just the halving itself, but all the emerging activity happening on Bitcoin. So along with the halving was the launch of runes. And there's a lot of excitement around ordinals. The L2 ecosystem is really taking off. I've been to so many conferences in you know, my career in crypto, and I've never seen nearly this much excitement and activity around Bitcoin. So that was really cool. And then another thing I would say is TON, the Telegram Open Network, is also, I think, an emerging ecosystem that's going to be really interesting. I'm an avid user of Telegram, as we all are, Telegram Premium member, and have been for years now. And I'm one of 900 million. So they have nearly a billion active users. So being able to activate them and bring crypto into the messaging app is really interesting. So I would say that the Bitcoin ecosystem, the Telegram ecosystem are the two that I think are kind of stealing the show right now.
You're absolutely right. Artificial intelligence seems like it's been a big narrative as well. Chandra, George, we've had you on the show before talking about Portal and some different things, but I want to hear both your backgrounds again. George, you and I have known each other since the early days of Bitcoin. You're an OG. Both of you guys, all you guys are.
Charlie, you and I, so I'm wearing a shirt right now that I thought would be on video, wasn't sure. This was for your benefit because I'm wearing a shirt from a coffee shop in Long Branch, New Jersey called Rook. And you and I met in like 2014 in
Rook Coffee, Vegas. Best coffee.
I'm wearing this t-shirt. It doesn't even say the word Rook on it. It's just a logo of a bird, right? And you looked at me and you said, Rook, Long Branch? And I was like, whoa, how do you know that? I'm like, hey, you know, and I know who you were. You were a quasi-Bitcoin celebrity back then. I know you didn't know who I was or even where I lived. That's right. You said, you know, my family
10 years ago.
Is in the Long Branch area. And so that started to kick off a little bit of a friendship. And what was interesting, you know, at that time, I was working on what was to be the first Bitcoin debit card in the United States, something that Brandon Goldman, my former co-founder, and I thought we had invented. And here's a really funny story about that, Charlie. You know, we were working really hard on that. We even raised a little bit of money to work on this project. And we did fairly well, even though we couldn't get the product to market. Coinbase and BitPay ended up using the contracts that we were able to get with these banks. This is very, very difficult. Why? Because I saw, I think early 2014 or late 2013, we were working on the project. And I don't know that we knew each other at the time. I saw an article that said, BitInstant, you know, your old company was working on the first Bitcoin debit card. And I read this and my heart fell to the floor.
Yeah.
What I didn't know was that it was actually written a year prior and the project had been totally abandoned.
Yeah. It was impossible. The funny thing was, is that we were working on a debit card. I just made a temporary version of it just to show, you know, people. We had just gotten like Visa to tentatively say yes and no bank. And I was so out of my league on knowing how to issue your own debit card. Now, white labeling your own debit card is so easy. There are websites you can go to and you can white label your own debt. But back then, we just wanted to have a debit card that said Bitcoin on it that people would hold. And it was so hard and just have software integrated. But there was no software integrations. There were no APIs with banks and credit card companies back then. Like, people don't realize that 10 years ago, money really couldn't move.
Bitcoin wasn't money back then. It may still not be money, but we, you know, remember back then we didn't treat it in the way that the government expects Bitcoin to be treated in a regulatory and very careful manner. So there's that too.
How did you meet Chandra? How did this?
Well, in 2016, I was a bit Bitcoin burned out. There was a lull, right? 2015, we had a real low.
Yeah, we had a bunch of them.
Yeah, technically not an all-time low. It was a big drop, right?
Oh, yeah.
I was getting into human performance, biohacking, and I even created a meetup in San Francisco called Peak Performance. And this was to allow for people in the tech space to learn how to optimize their day, optimize their bodies, their health, etc. And Chandra had created a really amazing product called Fuel that allowed for hyper-personalization of meals based on your body, your weight, your activity levels, all synced. And then they would ship meals to your door, flash frozen, and they were very healthy and very tasty. And so I found the company that I needed most to eat, and I wanted to work. So I reached out to the founders. That was Chandra, that was his brother Manoj. The three of us, 8 years later, still work together.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
See, isn't that interesting, you know, for fellow founders out there and people that are in the space? It's like, you like a product, you know, every single product that I've ever liked or you still use, I should have invested in or should continue to invest in more, because like, you try to trust your own instincts, but here you went further than that and you met the person and now you guys started a company together.
That is not an uncommon story, Charlie.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You know, when you say, every product that I love and frequently use, I should have invested in. There's a financial product right there. What if there's a product that actually looks at your spending patterns, right? Analyzes what you're most frequently using, what you love, and then just take some of your cash and invest it into that stock of that company. It's public. You're basically aligning consumer spending with capital allocation into companies.
It's ridiculous. Every Bitcoiner should have known to invest in NVIDIA 10 years ago, you know? I'm just so mad that like everyone's doing, and I'm like, oh, the NVIDIA, like out of all the stocks that could have pumped, like I'd rather AMC pump or some stupid, you know, but like I'm happy, GME or something. Yeah, but it's like NVIDIA hurts more because it's like been a part of our lives for such a long time.
Yep.
As gamers, computer tech nerds, whatever. And so you're right, like everything, DoorDash, I use like every single day. There's so many companies, Scotch tape, aluminum foil, like all these things just invest.
Yeah, put your money where your mouth is, right?
Like use on a day-to-day basis. The interesting thing here is that I think that, take crypto aside, a product that everyone that has and wants to use, and more people are buying it every day, is Bitcoin. I meet people every single day, and we always like bond over Bitcoin. And we bond over crypto too, but there's like this common thing. So you say that like we want to use it. Do you really think that more and more people now that own Bitcoin, but are like, you know, like that separation of Bitcoin and crypto, can it come to an end?
Great question. So there's a high level thesis, and then there is the actual practicality of how people see things and what they're using things for, right? The high level thesis is, you know, we all believe in hyper Bitcoinization. At some point, we're going to have speculative attack on the Godzilla fiat currencies, the US dollar, and then Bitcoin replaces fiat, right? The path of that speculation has to go through gambling against all sorts of crazy assets, JPEGs, PDFs, whatever, you know, all of these altcoins, all of these community currencies. And so enabling Bitcoin to be the part of capital, the pool of capital from which people speculate into all of these different cryptocurrencies, I think is a very controversial topic, but actually it's essential for drawing more and more people to ultimately adopt Bitcoin. You know, when you and I entered Bitcoin, there was only Bitcoin. A lot of people who are in crypto now come there for DeFi yield or for meme coins or whatever it is. And then they eventually find their way to Bitcoin. So I don't think there's necessarily a separation. It's actually going to get more and more intertwined.
I feel like there has been a separation for a long time, and now it's going to get more and more intertwined. And how is Portal going to be that center of bringing it all back together?
That is a great segue, and which is probably why you're a great podcaster. So our mission is to make it safe, efficient, and easy to find opportunities across the crypto landscape and go back to Bitcoin, or from, if you're coming from another ecosystem, find opportunities on Bitcoin, because there's an explosion of layer twos being built on Bitcoin. You know, in when we started in 2019, 2020, there was like one layer two or two that mattered, right? Lightning and maybe MasterCoin, which nobody used.
I miss MasterCoin.
And now there's 82 at last count.
Wow.
And what Portal is building is, we call it the native Bitcoin liquidity router. Cross-chain, it doesn't make any difference whether you are an L2, you're a pegged side chain, you are a federated side chain, a liquid, whatever it is, or you're another blockchain entirely altogether. You can seamlessly swap in and out of these assets without having a custodian in the middle. And you can do that because we use a layer two cross-chain atomic swap-based system. One time when you move your assets into the L2 is when you pay layer one fees, and everything else after that is lightning fast, basically like lightning. It's just off-chain, unbroadcast transactions that update your balances. And then you're kind of like in a centralized exchange level of speed and user experience. And then you can play your DeFi games. You can invest in the Solana meme coin. You can invest in runes, this, that, and the other, all happen on layer two. And then when you want to settle your balances is when you close your channel, technically, is when you actually bring them back to layer one, which requires confirmations and fees. The whole thing happens without anyone holding custody. That's the key innovation we bring to the table. Because, you know, as you know very well, the biggest problem in crypto, even from way back when, right, like from Mt. Gox to, you know, FTX or Wormhole or Orbit or Multichain, all of these hacks, almost everything comes down to poorly secured user fund custody.
Always.
We want to solve that once and for all and then be done with it.
We constantly hear about this term atomic swaps, especially a lot more lately. I know it's a technology that's been around for a while, but it took a while for like development and also for liquidity. But how does it work, and why is it the tech that everyone's excited?
Great question. So atomic swaps date back to, I think, 2013, when an anonymous post from Bitcoin Talk forums, which is where most of the innovations in crypto come from, in my opinion.
Always.
Talked about this protocol, always, right? Everything that you think is new, there's a reference to that in the Bitcoin Talk forum in crypto, generally. So a little bit of background. So there is this problem called the fair swap problem. It dates back to an informal proof published in 1996. So what that says is, if you and I are sitting in a room, let's say in Sarasota, and Charlie wants to give me a gold coin and I want to give him some dirty fiat cash, we're basically bound by the constraints of physics. If I give you my cash and if you don't give me your gold coin, something's going to happen. And if you give me your gold coin and if I don't give you my fiat, something else is going to happen, right? Like the constraints of the physical space impose that the two transactions are binding, yes, basically. But when you're separated in time and space, right? Like when I'm in San Francisco and you are in Puerto Rico and we want to exchange, and then there's a, not only a distance separation, but who has to do it first? What if you send me your stuff first digitally, and then I don't send you my stuff as promised? And there is this proof called the impossibility of fairness in a situation like that. For a long time, that was the case. After Bitcoin came along, that was the only blockchain, right? Like there was, you know, obviously Litecoin and Bitcoin derivatives. There was even a website, I don't know if you remember, where you could generate your own blockchain. So now that you assume that there are two separate blockchains, an atomic swap actually solves this problem by making the blockchain itself as an escrow. And the way it works is very clever. Let's say, so I generate secret, right, which I keep secret, and then I hash it. And then what I say, let's say, you know, you and I agree that your gold token is worth 20 of my silver tokens, and we agree on the exchange price, we agree on the size of the order. Then I take my 20 silver tokens on my silver blockchain, and I put them in a contract with what is called a hash time lock contract. So I created the secret, I have the hash, and the spend condition on this is I can take my coins back or spend them back to my address after 20 days, or Charlie can take these silver tokens if he knows the secret of this hash, basically the pre-image of the hash, right? And then I pass that hash to you.
Yep.
And what you do is you create a mirror image contract on the gold chain, which says Chandra can take my gold token if he reveals the secret to this hash, or I will take my coins back in 40 days, let's say. So now I have the secret. It's a binding. It creates completely disparate blockchains that don't communicate with each other. They're completely endogenous systems. Now, what this structure does is it actually creates an entanglement between those two contracts in time. Technically, we call it bringing back the synchrony. Synchronous blockchains, now you've synchronized them because I have an incentive. So here's what happens, right? So I go and so within 10 days, I reveal your secret and I take your gold coin. And so you have 10 more days now that the secret is revealed to take that, go to the silver chain, use it to take my silver coins. And so the atomicity comes when either the entire transaction happens, meaning I take your gold coins and then you have 10 days to take my silver coins. So both of those happen, or none of those happen. You keep your coins, I keep my coins, failed transaction. There's nothing in the middle.
Yeah, it creates a situation where, like, if someone doesn't do their other side, there's collateral or something to, like, prevent no one from not getting their funds.
Right, right. The only way I can take your gold coin is by revealing the secret. And if I do, because of the difference in time locks, there's a 10-day period where only you, not me, can take my silver coins. So that's the atomicity. It binds the two different exchanges into one atomic exchange. So it's a fascinating tech. In Bitcoin, we use what is called hash time lock contracts. This is old tech, but it was never implemented because, like most things Bitcoiners do, great theory, fantastic innovation. Nobody cares to reduce anything to a product, especially a product with distribution, right? Like that's not the Bitcoin ethos or culture, because that's just it, which is fine. And so to make it actually practical, you have to, basically assuming that you and I somehow met in Ether space, we've negotiated, we've come to terms, and then there's a channel for us to exchange these hash of these pre-images, you know, public key hashes and all this information that needs to flow. Where is that? It doesn't exist, right?
Doesn't exist.
So what we've done is we've solved a bunch of problems. I mean, there's a lot of problems with layer one atomic swaps, first of which is like for every swap, you have to wait one confirmation cycle, pay the fees and all that stuff. Plus, there is no way to actually peer-to-peer find these exchanges or orders.
What's interesting is that now this technology has more come out and Bitcoin layer two narrative, you know, as we were learning earlier in the show, it's like kind of growing and it's being first, it's been talked about. And George, what were you going to say? You were going to say something, but I was going to ask a question.
You brought up a good point, which is, you know, a feature of atomic swaps is that if the other party doesn't execute, the funds that are locked up for the first party simply return back into his possession.
Exactly.
Technically, it never left his possession, right? But it's now freely spendable. But that feature is also a bug when it comes to an exchange. Yeah. How are you going to be able to coordinate a scalable exchange with that as its function? So an AMM is what can make this really possible.
I'm going to ask you how positioned Portal to be the top kind of company in the space now doing this. And is that AMM kind of like where you see this future?
Right. Exactly. A couple of innovations, and I won't go too much into the technicals. So one thing is, you don't need to have atomic swap channels between every party that wants to do transactions, because then you're again left with finding the counterparty every time. So we've implemented the AMM model. Also, forming, like for example, Lightning channels between, let's say there are 1,000 people. Each party needs to have a channel with every 999 other parties. It's one on-chain transaction each, and that doesn't scale. That's one of the problems with Lightning. So what we've done is we've implemented the efficient way of forming these channels off-chain, meaning the one that we call it the hook transaction is one that goes on-chain. All of these people participate in it. After that, all of those sub-channels, peer-to-peer channels are all off-chain, so there's no cost. So it's very fast and it's very cheap. Second thing is we've implemented what is called a multi-party HTLC. So instead of one party doing this on one chain, another party doing it on another chain, there's a multi-party HTLC on Bitcoin, and there's a corresponding contract on every other participating chain. And the outputs from that are actually across from traders on one side to the liquidity providers on the other side in the AMM. Okay, so it feels just like you're trading against like Uniswap V3 or whatever else, all the other AMM models. So you won't have to wait. You don't have to wait to find counterparty. There are prices displayed. You just trade. And then you also have, for now, centralized Oracle price signal that you can use as a reference, right? Like what is the market price of this exchange ratio? There's, you know, we use the best available data providers and we use some AI to give you the Oracle price ranges so you're never too far arbitraged away by any party.
Super awesome. George, what were you going to say?
The multi-party channels is something that in Lightning doesn't exist at the moment. We've actually had to work on improving Lightning in order to make this possible. There was a white paper called Channel Factories that was invented, I think, a couple of years back, but it was never implemented. It was just a theory. And our team of really talented Bitcoin engineers have been able to make that a reality. So I think, you know, we're actually, you know, not just making a practical Bitcoin AMM, but in fact, extending the functionality of Lightning.
Right. So Christian Decker proposed the Channel Factories, and our implementation of it includes a couple of innovations like improvements on the Channel Factory original Christian Decker design to make sure that the user experience mirrors what people are used to now with the liquidity pools and AMM models on Ethereum, etc. And then there's a layer of multi-party computations.
When are you guys launching?
Which guarantees additional privacy. We should be mainnet ready by end of May.
Wow. Oh my God, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Very soon. Well, I'm excited to have this
very soon.
Hopefully released around that.
Almost everything we talked about is in testnet already or by next week.
Phenomenal.
Mainnet ready by May.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been a blast.
Thanks, Charlie.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.